Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated August 15th, 2016. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Park Trail Back to Youth, an article by Tony Reed, staff writer for the Herald and Review. And this is from Decatur. It's been said that you are nearer to God's heart in a garden than any place else on earth. Decatur's Tony Williamson, blessed with two green thumbs, wouldn't argue with that, but the 54-year-old is more interested in trying to go home again, back to the celestial days of his youth. In that idyllic land before time, kids sought summer play and adventure in the city's parks from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., just for the sheer joy of it, not because they were in hot pursuit of pocket monsters from Japan who aren't really there. So fired with nostalgia, Williamson plowed his furrow back to the future by creating his own mini park. He snapped up some chunks of land in a tax sale and, beginning in 2011, got to work crafting a verdant slice of heaven on 3/4 acre near Brush College Road and East William Street. A welder laid off from Caterpillar, Inc., he transformed himself into a one-man earth mover as he thinned trees and cleared a jungle of overgrown brush that was liberally salted with human detritus. I even found a kitchen sink, he says, and I found an old door which I saved the knobs from. I might be able to incorporate them into something somehow. Williamson is very thrifty like that. He has planted apple and pear trees and lots of ornamental shrubs and bushes, timing his forays to outdoor emporiums, such as Rural King, with military precision. See all those bushes, he says, pointing to a row of pretty ones? I bought those at the end of the year and got them for $1 apiece. He's labored to build a picnic area complete with fire pit and hammock and even has rudimentary restroom facilities in a shed-like building built so tough it could double as a nuclear fallout shelter. But it's not all been smooth sailing, fueled by copious sweat equity and an eye for bargains. One day, he was chopping away with a chainsaw and managed to create a cloud of dust that included atomized remnants of poison ivy. I breathed in the dust and my lungs started swelling shut, he says, and I had blisters on my skin. No pain, no gain, however, and what his suffering has wrought is a pretty slice of park-like paradise with steep, grassy slopes and a creek running through it at the bottom. Ancient natural trees and his landscaped contributions set it all off nicely in a manicured space that still manages to look natural. Favored friends get invited over for a steak on the grill and a chance to relish the great outdoors as they might remember it, only this time with beer. I told him, you need a landscaping business, said his girlfriend, Susan Irwin. He is amazing and he just has the knack. He'll place things and if it doesn't look perfect, he will move them and create something else. He loves horticulture. Williamson calls his park creation Ridgeview, and in which he is well pleased. He even had overnight camps out there and says his trip down a bucolic memory lane has fringe benefits for everyone. I am beautifying Decatur while reminding me of my childhood, he says. Next up, he is going to add a treehouse for adults. This article is accompanied by several photographs. One, with Tony leaning up against a tree and a sign showing Ridgeview, captioned, Tony Williamson built his own private park based on good memories from the time he spent at Galloway Park as a child. Another photograph shows a picnic table with a streetlight on top. Williamson's park features several expressions of patriotism as well as unique decor. Another photo of Williamson down by a small creek. Tony Williamson shows the creek that runs through his private park. And finally, a very welcoming looking hammock captioned, Tony Williamson's private park has a view of East William Street Road near the Brush College Road intersection. And from state and regional news, rainy day fund on way to drying out. A stopgap spending plan that lawmakers approved to address Illinois' lack of a state budget for a second straight year is quickly draining the state's rainy day fund, focusing more attention on the state's unique and long-running financial management problems. An account that experts say should have $1.5 to $3 billion to help weather an economic downturn was down to about $180 million as of Friday. In a matter of weeks, the balance in what is supposed to be a savings account will be zero. Financial watchdogs and at least one major credit rating agency say Illinois' move to drain the $275 million fund to pay for items such as food and medicine for people in state-run facilities in the 16-month absence of a full budget means that when, not if, a recession hits, new taxes or spending cuts will have to be even more draconian. Using the rainy day fund for cash flow is nothing new in Illinois, where critics say lawmakers have spent decades making politically popular short-term decisions that dug a deeper financial hole. Illinois has hundreds of billions in pension and other debt, and is on track to spend nearly $8 billion more than it takes in this year. In effect, this state is just continuing to act not only as if it would never rain again, but that they wouldn't even have to close the windows, said Lawrence Massal, president of the Civic Federation, a Chicago-based tax and policy research organization. Most states don't have enough money saved to deal with the typical drop in revenue that accompanies a recession, a study released in January by the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. The states that are best prepared, including Alaska, West Virginia, and Nebraska, have enough to cover anticipated revenue shortfalls in most recession scenarios. Six states, including Kansas, New Jersey, and Arkansas, have no rainy day fund. Illinois was ranked as the least prepared of those with a fund because its account has been used to help pay day-to-day bills when there's not enough in the general operating fund. Its maximum balance has typically ranged from $226 million to $275 million, but the daily balance often is zero or close to it. Governor Bruce Rauner's office said he'd like to establish a true rainy day fund. He advocated doing this in his first budget address and has worked on legislation with lawmakers, but hasn't outlined how it would be funded. The Republican has been deadlocked with the Democrat-controlled legislature over state budgets for the last fiscal year and the current fiscal year. State law and court orders required that some expenses be paid, such as pension payments, state employee payroll, and services for disabled people and foster children. But the rest of the payments were allowed to stack up or were delayed by several months. As of Friday, the Comptroller's Office estimates the backlog of unpaid bills at $7.5 billion. The stopgap measure approved just before July 1st was intended to keep the state running for 6 months, getting lawmakers past the November election, after which they say they want to pass a comprehensive budget deal. Both Rauner's administration and Democrat leaders agree that, given the budget crisis, spending the rainy day money on critical items such as fuel for state police vehicles and food and medicine for prison inmates and residents of state-run veterans' homes was the right thing to do. Some of the vendors who provide those items hadn't been paid in months, and officials feared the state would be cut off. A rainy day fund is for a day when it's raining, and I have to tell you, it's not raining now. I'm not sure what the definition of rain is, said Rauner's budget director, Tim Newding. Democratic State Senator Heather Steens, who backed the stopgap measure, is sponsoring the bipartisan legislation to create a true rainy day fund. The account would be funded once the state's bill backlog drops below $1 billion and revenue reaches a certain level. It also sets parameters for when the legislature or governor may use the money. Steens said she expects the measure to be part of a larger budget deal, whenever one is reached. But even if lawmakers can come to an agreement, it will likely take years before the state would be in a financial position to begin adequately socking money away. I am concerned that we don't have a real, functional rainy day fund, Steen said. It's just not relevant until we are in a position of being able to fund it. And trending now from the local page, kids taken from mother after alcohol-related crash. This is from Forsyth. Police took a Decatur mother's two young children into protective custody Saturday night after alleging she was involved in a rollover accident with one of her children on board while driving under the influence of alcohol. The children, a 9-month-old girl and 3-year-old boy, were handed over to DCFS and later placed with other family members. Police claim the baby girl was with her mother when she crashed in a bean field north of Illiniwek Road near Forsyth. Lieutenant Jamie Belcher said Macon County Sheriff's deputies found the vehicle abandoned after the accident, reported at 7:15 p.m., when they later traced the 25-year-old woman to her Decatur home. She denied driving the sport utility vehicle. Both mother and daughter were checked out at a hospital but had no obvious injuries, police say. The mother was later booked on charges of endangering the life of a child, aggravated DUI, possession of drug paraphernalia, obstructing police, leaving the scene of an accident, driving on a suspended license, and other offenses. She was being held in Macon County Jail on Sunday night. And continuing on the local page, Revenue Review, Curfew on City Council's Plate. This is by Allison Petty from Decatur. The Decatur City Council will get a recap of all the city's license and permit fees and major revenue streams at its meeting tonight. City Manager Tim Gleason plans a presentation with that information during a study session at the end of the meeting. Gleason said he is following through on a pledge he made months ago to conduct this type of review. The presentation will not include recommendations for changes. I want to walk the council through all of these so they understand what we have and how long there has been no adjustment in the fees for each of those licenses, he said. In other business, the council will consider an ordinance to close 2 downtown parks, Central Park and Water Street Plaza, from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. Gleason said the measure is intended to curb vandalism and damage that has occurred in the parks over the past several years. Under the proposed ordinance, there would be exceptions to the curfew for events that are sponsored or permitted by the city, people walking to and from work, emergencies, and official police and city business. Violators could face fines between $250 and $500, according to the ordinance. The hours would mirror those of other parks in the city, as the Decatur Park District's parks are closed from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m., unless otherwise posted. Also, the City Council will likely reconsider bids for concrete and asphalt work that members voted 4-3 to reject at the August 1st meeting. The projects represent street repairs made possible by the city's local motor fuel tax, which took effect in April. Council members initially voted to reject the bids in part because they came in lower than expected, and members wanted to increase the scope of work. Several also expressed concerns that one contractor was deemed non-responsive and the bid was not considered, although city officials would not openly name that contractor. Gleason said Friday that city staff now plan to bid the additional work as a separate item. I'm confident that both resolutions will be adopted just based on discussion with elected officials and more so the discussion that the mayor has had with some of the elected officials, he said. And now, also by Tony Reed, Vinny's Block Party for the Homeless. This is from Decatur. The team of tried and tested volunteers known as Vinny's Helping Hands were up to their wrists in tasty barbecue again Sunday afternoon. The occasion was the Block Party for the Homeless, hosted outside the Water Street Mission by retired Decatur restaurateur and full-time Good Samaritan, Vinny Barbie. The hard core of volunteers who help him feed his trademark barbecue, more than 120 pounds of it, along with 200 hot dogs plus cakes and cookies, water and soft drinks, number around 12 and are known as his helping hands. It's an odd kind of volunteer role, really, one where you stand there handing out delicious free food while at the same time wishing we lived in a time when no one needed it. I'm always surprised at the size of the crowd, said volunteer Bill Dietz, 57, as more than 120 people, aged 8 to senior citizen, got ready to form a chow line. I wish there was hardly anybody coming here, and that they need to do so is a sad thing. But the need never goes away. Dietz has known Barbie for more than half a century, and like many of his fellow volunteers, he stepped up for the feeding crew because he believed he hadn't been doing enough to help his fellow man. I just felt there was a point in my life where I wasn't giving enough back, he added. Vinny opened his arms and said, "Come on and help me," and I've been doing this for the last 3 years. Barbie has been staging the block party for 15 years and says he has no shortage of willing hands assisting him. A new Decatur business supplied cupcakes, while a cookie maker who prefers to remain incognito has been baking sweet treats for the last 8 years. And David Lee's Party Time DJ service, a regular feature of the block party, again provided musical accompaniment, only this time toting a new music trailer shaped like a giant boombox. Barbie said such great help makes what he does possible, and he has no intention of slowing down until God doesn't give him a choice. "Everybody says to me, 'Vinny, when are you going to stop?'" he told the Hungry Cat crowd Sunday. "And I'm like, no way, we've got to keep doing this to help friends, and you guys are friends of mine. I will keep doing this until I can't do it no more." And an article from Clinton. DeWitt mental health provider continues shutdown. Even though DeWitt County's largest provider of outpatient mental health services has resumed one program and retains another, most services remain suspended as the agency works toward an organized shutdown. "It's very difficult to know that there are people in our county who need our services and can't access all of them," said Lynn Scoville, executive director of DeWitt County Human Resource Center, HRC, that served 500 people last year. "The staff remaining is very focused on doing what's best for our clients and to help them through the transition," she said. "We were the safety net for our county, and now we have to tell people that we no longer offer certain services and refer them to places that can help." The agency that once employed 30 people is down to about a dozen. In June, HRC decided to begin shutting down July 1st because there was no state budget, and HRC was owed $150,000 by the state. When the General Assembly and Governor approved a partial state budget, HRC revised its decision and suspended services. HRC is still owed $82,000 by the state. Payments also continue for developmental training and day programs for people with developmental disabilities, Scoville said. So HRC, effective July 25th, resumed that program, and because some of those clients work in HRC's Encore thrift shop, the store remains open, Scoville said. 29 of HRC's 32 developmental disability clients have returned to the program. "We are thrilled to have them back," she said. Eventually, another provider could take over the program. Those negotiations are still going on, Scoville said. Meanwhile, Kleeman Village, 14 apartments for low-income adults with mental illness, remains open, she said. Kleeman is owned and staffed by HRC. "We maintain the residential program at Kleeman Village and are looking at other providers who can take over Kleeman," she said. HRC's crisis intervention services have been assumed by Decatur-based Heritage Behavioral Health Center until another provider can take over, Scoville said. The Substance Abuse Prevention and Early Childhood Addiction Intervention Program has been taken over by Piatt County Mental Health, which is providing services in Clinton. HRC is continuing to negotiate with agencies to take over its other mental health and substance abuse programs. Referrals to other agencies are being provided to clients. HRC is trying to sell its building on Illinois 54. It's very unfortunate that HRC has had to shutter some of its services and look for new providers, said Sharon Mills, administrator of the DeWitt County 708 Community Mental Health Board, which funds mental health programs using county tax money. Mills credited HRC with providing some services during the transition. We are looking at potentially new providers and how funds could support them in the coming years, Mills said. And from the editorial page, we have two opinion pieces. Jonah Goldberg writes, "Boring is Clinton's edge." Donald Trump's supporters complain that the media is fixated on the billionaire's wild and crazy campaign while ignoring, or at least downplaying, Hillary Clinton's gaffes, missteps, and outright scandals. And they're right. There is a double standard. Actually, it's a multi-pronged standard. For some in the mainstream media, good, old-fashioned left-wing bias is at work. Every 4 years, the Republican presidential candidate is treated like some alien warlord wandering in from the Badlands beyond the frontier to seize power in our glorious capital city. One small example, it's a wistful, nostalgic exercise in the era of Trump to think back to 2012 when Mitt Romney explained how, after being elected governor of Massachusetts, he worked with women's groups so he could hire more females for his administration. He said that the groups had sent him binders full of women, i.e. binders full of resumes, for him to review. In other words, Romney did exactly what feminists want politicians to do, but he used the phrase binders full of women, and the mainstream media collectively ran around like their hair was on fire. They should remember that the next time they wonder why so many Trump supporters discount media hysteria about Trump. But what about the conservative media? Notwithstanding some talk radio and Fox News opinion hosts and a few Trump-friendly political operatives moonlighting as pundits, most of the conservative press is hostile to Trump. If you've been reading me over the last year, you know I am part of this group. I am a senior editor at National Review magazine, which has been extremely critical of Trump for the most part, though we have run some dissenters. Other conservative outlets, the Weekly Standard, Commentary, and the websites The Federalist, Hot Air, Red State, and Resurgent, have taken similar approaches. Objections to Trump from the right cover the waterfront from his glandular personality and narcissistic character to the threats his populism poses to the conservative movement and to the country. But virtually every conservative I know, including those openly saying they will vote for her, think Clinton is awful. Indeed, a great many of the mainstream reporters I know think she's pretty terrible, too. As P.J. O'Rourke, the brilliant libertarian satirist, quite unsatirically put it on NPR, "I am endorsing Hillary and all her lies and all her empty promises. It's the second worst thing that can happen to this country, but she's way behind in second place. She's wrong about absolutely everything, but she's wrong within normal parameters." He added in an essay for the Daily Beast, "Better the devil you know than the Lord of the Flies on his own 757. Thanks to my fear of spontaneously bursting into flames, I can't follow O'Rourke all the way to pulling a lever for Hillary Clinton. I'll write in some third choice. But I think O'Rourke's analysis offers insight into the media coverage as well. As has been confirmed for the upteenth billionth time this week, Clinton is corrupt and deceitful. She and her husband operate as if they are some medieval royal family above the petty rules and customs that govern the little people. It's why I've been calling them the Medicis of the Ozarks for so long. If you don't think they are aloof, entitled graspers and grifters, it's probably because you haven't been paying attention. And that's the problem. Their grafting and grifting is so well established, so well known, it never really surprises anyone. Her corruption is priced into politics. In a normal, healthy political system, the Clintons would be shunned like pimps in an Amish colony. But we don't live there, so the Clintons bore rather than shock. This is Hillary Clinton's greatest advantage. The devil we know is a boring, paper-pushing bureaucrat. Meanwhile, the one thing no one can deny, Trump, is not boring. It's possible to love him or hate him, but no one can be indifferent to him. When you drive past a part of town that has been blighted and run down all your life, you don't slow down and look at it. But if an 18-wheeler loaded with bovine manure jackknifes on the highway, sending its cargo in all directions, whether you're horrified or amused, you've just got to slow down and take a gander. This rubber-necked magnetism largely explains Trump's primary victories, but it also explains his probable general election defeat. Enough primary voters loved the spectacle, but general election voters are apt to recoil at such a spectacle in the Oval Office. And now by Eugene Robinson, Trunk Abases Our Democracy. Apparently, we've reached the part where Donald Trump, not satisfied with having demolished the Republican Party, tries to bring down the rest of the political system as well. No one should be surprised. The garbage that comes out of his mouth gets more vile and putrid by the day. On Tuesday, he suggested that fervent defenders of the right keep and bear arms, take things into their own hands if Hillary Clinton were elected. It was a shocking incitement to political violence. If she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks, Trump told a rally in North Carolina. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. We all understood exactly what he was saying. House Speaker Paul Ryan suggested that perhaps he was trying to be funny. Since Trump knows nothing, perhaps Ryan will explain to him that 5 of our 44 presidents have been shot while in office. A day later, Trump was equally unhinged at a Florida rally when he went on a bizarre rant about the terrorist Islamic State, also known as ISIS. In many respects, you know, they honor President Obama. ISIS is honoring President Obama. He's the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. The founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton. Be honest, all you Republicans who support Trump, despite knowing better. If you were walking down the sidewalk and someone coming toward you was screaming those words verbatim, you'd cross the street. This is the man you want to entrust with the nuclear codes? Seriously? Conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt tried gamely to help Trump clean up the mess. I know what you meant, he told the candidate Thursday. You meant that Obama created the vacuum. He lost the peace. No. I meant that he's the founder of ISIS. I do, Trump said. He was the most valuable player. Hewitt suggested this line of attack was a mistake. Trump's reply, no, it's no mistake. Everyone's liking it. I think they're liking it. So much for the idea that Trump, at some point, will undergo a metamorphosis and turn into a normal candidate. The kind who doesn't go around encouraging political assassination or accusing the president of founding a terrorist group. If the cheering crowds at his hate-filled rallies are happy, Trump is happy. In 2000, after the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 that the Florida recount must cease, Al Gore graciously conceded to George W. Bush. Gore said he was doing so for the sake of our unity as a people and the strength of our democracy. Can anyone imagine Trump ever giving such a speech? Trump wants to stoke anger, resentment, and victimhood. He abases our democracy, and Republican elected officials abase themselves by supporting him. History will have no mercy for Trump's enablers. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, August 15th, 2016. Please stay tuned.